Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have the exciting part two episode with Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph P. Farrell on CERN and dimensional doorways. Now, Dr. Farrell believes that the CERN Hadron Collider experiments are a cover for a much larger covert weapons operation program. Now, in part one, we examined the links between Farrell's Giza Death Star book series and the idea that CERN may be creating a wonder weapon for the 21st century. In this special episode, we'll drill down on the strange nature of the experiments at CERN and the strangelets controversy that may explain the heightened security around this mysterious project. Is CERN attempting to open the door to another reality? Here we go. Dr. Joseph Farrell, CERN Strangelets, Dimensional Doorways.
If we're dealing with a machine that could cause planetary resonance effects, very, very secretly, then immediately you've got a military possibility here. If you can generate planetary effects in specific regions with this machine through resonance or what have you, or on other planets or in the sun, do you think they're going to release the information publicly?
You know, the speed at which we're acquiring new public technology represents only a tiny fraction of what's available and the incredible advances that have been made in covert circles. If there are indeed breakaway elements inside the national security state working with global corporations on technology that is so far above laptops and smartphones that it's beyond absurd, then on the few occasions where their operations must be run in the open to a certain degree, we must be ready to seize the opportunity to not fall for the official story and to dig a little deeper. Are the CERN Hadron Collider experiments really defined the holy grail of physics or something else? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions. The biggest secrets. The darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist. Go for truth. With top guests. Like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we, as a society, escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment. It's killing human productivity. And where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special winter discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. This is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
Well, hello everyone. We're going to get right into this powerful part two episode with Dr. Joseph Farrell on CERN and the very unusual aspects surrounding its Hadron Collider experiments. Now, it would be nice to just hope that somewhere out there we had these humanitarian institutions raising the bar to serve the world with their discoveries. And you know, sometimes that's really true. But with CERN, not so much. Ultra secret, ultra expensive, $6 billion budget. And ultra-dangerous, according to Dr. Farrell, with the media trying to brainwash the public with this term fake news to try and salvage some little power they could have. Let me take this opportunity to remind you to visit darkjournalist.com to sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any of the exciting shows we have coming up for you. Joseph, it's great to have you back for part two on CERN. Now, I want to start part two with a little background on this unusual technology. Now, there are other particle accelerators out there.
Yes.
They're probably not as extensive as the Hadron Collider, but they are operating.
Right.
So approximately how long have we been utilizing these types of experiments and this type of technology? Did it start back in the 50s, somewhere in there?
Oh, it began actually during World War II. because cyclotrons were used, of course, to verify certain aspects of the theory, and also they were modified to separate isotopes in the strong magnetic fields. So you actually had cyclotrons in Nazi Germany, in the United States, that were, and in Japan, incidentally, that were being used to enrich isotopes. So it began there, and since then, they have grown bigger and bigger and bigger as they have been trying to probe smaller and smaller aspects of particle physics. In other words, now you're not even dealing really with protons, electrons, and neutrons. You're dealing with the quarks that make them up.
Right. And just real quick, can you explain what a quark is?
You'd have to familiarize yourself with the theory of Murray-Gell-Mann.
Uh-huh.
Quarks are an entirely mathematical, when you look at it, an entirely mathematical thing in order to explain the spin of different particles. And finally, they came to the conclusion, well, particles are made up of other particles, and on we go. You know, we're back with Thomas Aquinas and the, you know, argument of infinite regression. In other words, religion again.
You know? Right. Yeah.
So we're doing metaphysics with equations now. But anyway, that's where it's all coming from. So you have to make bigger and bigger colliders to probe smaller and smaller things at higher and higher energies to reproduce the effects of earlier periods right after the Big Bang. That's essentially what's been going on. You're in kind of a collider race. But like I say, when you start building magnetic fields that powerful, you're going to start getting other effects that have nothing to do with particles.
Interesting. Now, what are some of the core aspects that will give us an opportunity to see, you know, the hidden side of how the Hadron Collider is doing these experiments, you know, in addition to what they tell us is the official reason? What would you like people to focus on?
The final thing that I want to, for people to zero in on is this idea that you have the Large Hadron Collider, a circular collider that has counter-rotating beams of protons. Okay, now the counter rotation here already should ring a bell. Okay,
right, and that's the Nazi Bell project you're referring to there, which was an advanced physics project they were working on that just disappeared at the end of the war.
Right. And then above this, you've got the proton synchrotron, which is the last stage of acceleration of the proton stream that's injecting the protons into the Large Hadron Collider. All right. The proton synchrotron is a smaller circular accelerator. Like I said, if you run an axis of rotation through the center of the Large Hadron Collider, then the proton synchrotron is sitting off of that axis rotation. And in fact, if you were to bring the proton synchrotron down to the same plane of the Large Hadron Collider, the proton synchrotron is going to sit on the edge of the collider. So in other words, you've got another rotating system canted off of the Large Hadron Collider with its own strong magnetic fields used to accelerate all of this. And that's going to introduce, in my thinking, a localized precessional wobble.
Huh.
Okay? So in other words, the physics of the machine, they'll tell you it's all about particle acceleration, but the hidden aspect of this could be a torsion machine. You know, think Richard Hoagland here. It could be a torsion machine with very different sorts of physical effects than they're advertising.
Okay.
And there you have the possibility for a real secret project. And you're embedding all of this, as I say, in rock in a nonlinear medium where immensely strong magnetic fields, what happens to rock? Well, rock, particularly if it's crystal-bearing rock, has what are called crystals under stress give off packets of sound called phonons, just like photons, all right, when they're under stress. The interesting thing here is if you look at the actual cameras, so to speak, the detectors, the ATLAS detector, the CMS detector, these things have large crystals, lead quartz crystals and other extremely exotic things that have been put into these detectors to detect and photograph, so to speak, the particle collisions as they're moving through these crystals. Okay, so in other words, you've got very deliberately designed nonlinear medium crystals that are reacting to all of this stuff. So bottom line here, Daniel, the way I'm looking at CERN, you've got the public story. This is all about particle physics. But when you stop and look at the machine itself, you've got a torsion machine. You've got a hyperdimensional machine, and now they're actually talking, you know, publicly admitting, yeah, we're also looking for higher dimensions. And every now and then there will be a story, well, we may have found evidence of that. Oh, really? Well, stop and think about what the machine's doing. It's counter-rotating. That's torsion. It's got another machine on top of it, canted off the axis of rotation for precessional wobble. You've got here a machine that can mimic planetary effects and therefore possibly be in resonance with them or create them. So yeah, I think there's a hidden esoteric occult project, and they've hinted at this in the logo itself.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you've mentioned that there's a kind of theme or practice which goes back to some of the work that the Nazi general Hans Kammler and his staff and his secret work on the Bell, of course.
Yeah.
And it was the idea of developing super secret projects right in public view.
Yeah.
Now, CERN certainly seems to follow this pattern with these secret experiments with a very well-known scientific project that's out in the open.
Yeah, fits the bill perfectly.
It really seems to.
It fits the bill perfectly because, again, people don't realize that in building this machine, they had to come up and literally invent technologies that they didn't have in order to make this machine work, even for the particle physics story. You know, these crystals, little square crystals, lead quartz crystals, and other very exotic things that are extremely expensive to engineer. This thing ran in the billions of dollars.
Right.
And then on top of this, they had to invent a computer technology to be able to handle the massive amounts of data that this thing was generating and separate the signal from the noise. So in other words, again, we're going back to the idea that the computers are making the selection of the data for the scientists to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes possible, in my thinking, particularly if you grant the fact that you're dealing with a hyperdimensional machine, no physicist in my thinking worth their salt would be able to look at that and say, we'd better plan for the possibility that this thing might have effects that none of us have anticipated. Just look at it. Strong magnetic fields and counter rotation, torsion, and so on and so forth. We'd better have data selection filters in the computer program to pull anything like that we need to pay attention to. And trust me, that kind of data, since it's so out of the mainstream of public consumption physics, so to speak, by the nature of the case, that data is going to be kept secret and withheld from the public and only released very sparingly. And the other thing that permits, again, if we're dealing with a machine that could cause planetary resonance effects, then immediately you've got a military possibility here. Because if you can generate planetary effects in specific regions with this machine through resonance or what have you, or on other planets or in the sun, do you think they're going to release the information publicly? No. What they're going to do is they're going to set up data correlation experiments, as I've suggested, and start investigating this stuff very, very secretly.
So on one hand, they're studying these unusual effects that are taking place, and on the other, they have this public face of finding the magical moment right after the Big Bang. And they set all of this up publicly, of course, to find the God particle. And now I know they claim that they have it, and that's another whole different avenue to go down. But here's my question. With all of the research that you've done on the Nazi Bell, how it disappeared, how the scientists who worked on it were killed, and, you know, we've done a few episodes on this together already, but now you're pointing out some similarities between CERN and what we know about the Bell. My question is, do you think with these Nazi ties, with this trail, do you think that the CERN Hadron Collider could be a stage of the Nazi Bell Project, or could be the Bell Project, or related to it?
Yeah, I do think that there is a connection to the thinking of Kammler and the bell, because again, you've got counter rotation. You've got something that clearly, when it was turned on, caused an effect that they may not have expected, namely levitation. So let's go back to what happened at CERN when they first turned it on. Remember?
Yes.
Remember what happened? They shut it down immediately.
Right.
And they said, oh, well, one of the coolant tanks for these big magnets in the Hadron Collider was pierced and it began to heat up, so we had to shut it down. Okay. Why, when you turn on a machine like this, does the coolant tank rupture? And I suspect that what happened was when they turned it on, they got some sort of effect.
Interesting. Okay, so let's get a little more specific about the effects that you think happened. Do you think that it levitated the way the bell is reported to have levitated? Is that the idea?
When they turned it on, I suspect that the whole thing probably began to pull out of its moorings, so to speak, that they were getting a gigantic torsion effect that they were not anticipating. And we shut it down and had to go in and redo some things, reconfigure the machine, and then turn it on again. And they invented the explanation, well, there was a rupture in the coolant tank. Why was it ruptured? That's my question.
So you think it may have actually been levitating the first time they turned it on?
It might have been starting to pull out of its moorings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to cause some other localized effect that they had not anticipated. So, yeah, I do think that we haven't been given the full story here. Absolutely.
Well, this is fascinating. And because of the excessive secrecy, we can't get the details of what happened. So, you know, if I filed a request or if some country's scientists objected to what they were up to, forget it.
Tough. Exactly.
So they can stonewall forever pretty much about their experiments because there's no process available, even legally or diplomatically, to get information. So it makes it hard to call them out on their activities. You know, let's suppose a nearby country started experiencing earthquakes out of the blue, just hypothetically. And as a result, you know, that's a result of the research that they were doing. There's still no way for them to address it because CERN is a sovereign entity unto itself.
Bingo. This is the problem. CERN is a sovereign entity. It is kind of like the physics equivalent of the Bank of International Settlements. It has the authority on its own to take out loans and stuff like this. It is in the charter that it has a quasi-sovereign status. So when they brought lawsuits in Germany and the United States to prevent it from being shut down, the lawsuits were dismissed because the people bringing the lawsuits had no standing, and the courts acknowledged that they had no jurisdiction over CERN. So what does that tell you? Well, it tells you that CERN's a sovereign entity. You cannot bring a lawsuit against it because it is sovereign, and it has so many countries involved. It is the physics equivalent, the cosmological equivalent of the Bank of International Settlements. And that right there should give people pause. Because why would you need that sovereign status if this project is about open science?
Mm-hmm.
The reality is sovereign status should tell you that there is a secretiveness to this whole project, that it is not entirely about what they're telling us it's about. So in other words, again, the particle physics thing is for public consumption. You've got a planetary sized torsion machine that I think is the real project here. And let's not forget that one of the movers and shakers in helping establish it was this Nazi lawyer by the name of Walter Hallstein.
Right.
Who was, you know, an advisor to Konrad Adenauer, who helped write the charter that sets up CERN, that you have this influence behind it. And again, to my mind, this is not coincidental. The fact that you've got this sovereign status and that you've got this kind of physics conception involved in and embodied in the machine itself tells me that this is about much more than particle physics. It is a secret project.
Well, you clearly have shown a post-war fascist, a direct link to CERN, and that's documented.
Yes.
So it's not even like we need to theorize on that here. We also know that the Nazis were obsessed with just this kind of project. You know, they wanted the ultimate wonder weapon to dominate the planet.
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
In another episode, we went into John J. McCloy, who had a strong hand in getting CERN off the ground. But he was made a high commissioner of Germany after World War II. And then later, he was on the Warren Commission that whitewashed the Kennedy assassination findings.
Right.
So, you know, very strange connections all around there. So clearly, we have reason to be suspect of CERN. My question, though, is why did the scientists who tried to stop CERN from doing their Hadron Collider experiments, even going to court to try in some cases, what was their angle in all of this? Where were they coming from?
Well, they were coming from the standard model of quantum mechanics, a strange, otherwise known as a quark gluon plasma. Is a state of matter that supposedly, according to the theory, exists within a few billionths of a second after the Big Bang, when matter is just, so to speak, sort of beginning to congeal, but it's not in any recognizable state. Well, a quark gluon plasma, CERN admitted that it might be capable of producing that state of matter in some of the collisions that they generated. Now, the problem that the people bringing these suits saw in that is if you look at a quark gluon plasma, it acts sort of like a mini black hole, or rather, more accurately, acts as sort of the gray goo in the nanotechnology fantasies. You know, when Eric Drexler first wrote his book on nanotechnology, he proposed the gray goo hypothesis, that you could create a nano machine that would convert all matter into a gray goo, mm-hmm. and that everything would end up as a gray goo. Well, a quark gluon plasma acts kind of like this, because what it does is any matter that comes in contact with it is converted into this quark gluon glue, so to speak. So, in other words, they began to fear that if it was successful in creating a sustained quark gluon plasma, that it would start acting like a mini black hole and begin to draw all matter that it came into contact with it, and creating an even bigger quark gluon plasma until the entire planet was converted into that. All right. So they were bringing suits against this possibility to shut it down. And CERN's response was very interesting. CERN's response was, well, there's only a few billionths of a chance that that would happen. if we drop a pencil, and this was actually the illustration used by one of CERN's representatives, if we drop a pencil on our desk, quantum mechanics will tell you that there is a remote possibility that the pencil will fall all the way through the desk and onto your floor. But the chances of that are vanishingly small statistically. And that was the example that CERN was giving to reassure everybody that, you know, even if we do create a quark gluon plasma, the chances of it doing anything like that are vanishingly small. Well, because of all of this hype, CERN had to change its story and say, well, it's not vanishingly small, it's zero. Mm-hmm. They just finally gave up trying to argue with these people and said it's zero. Well, the people were successful in bringing their suits, as I said, but the courts dismissed them because they had no jurisdiction over CERN. Mm-hmm. And this was true of the German courts. I think there was even a suit in Belgium. There was a suit in the United States. And in each case, the court says, we have no jurisdiction. You know, we share your concern in a couple of these court cases, but, you know, we have no jurisdiction, so we can't do anything about it because it's a sovereign entity.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, again, why do you need a sovereign entity to conduct open science?
Uh-huh. It's very secretive.
It's very secretive.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Well, if they were building a wonder weapon, that would be a great reason to make it secret.
Yep.
But let's go back to what they say is the reason for what they're doing with the particle collider experiments. Presumably, it was to find the God particle, mm-hmm. the Higgs boson. And now they claim that they have, but can we confirm that this is true?
There are people, let me be honest and blunt and say no. We can't say conclusively.
Okay.
Because there are people in the scientific community that have raised questions about it. Now, you'll notice something that happened when they discovered the Higgs, and that was they rushed Higgs off to get his Nobel Prize.
Right.
In other words, they put the imprimatur of approval on the thing before there was any real lengthy debate about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that raises the red flag to me right there. And in spite of this fact, there are some scientists that still raise questions about the whole thing. Did we really indeed find the Higgs or what have you? And again, I think that probably what's going on here is that they may have found, I should say possibly, not probably, that they may have found at the time that they claimed to have found the Higgs, that they may have found something else. And the Higgs was the story that was put out there to cover up whatever else it was that they may have found.
Huh.
We're starting to hear little stories now. Every now and then you get a story on fizz.org or places like that where they will say, they're looking now for evidence of parallel universes or hyperdimensions, and they may have found evidence of this. Oh, really? Really? I thought this was about particle physics. Which, again, you know, the idea of parallel universes does come out of quantum mechanics because of certain things in it. But the really interesting thing to me is, why are we looking for higher dimensions? Why are we thinking that this machine could show evidence of that? Well, again, you've got, you know, I hate to put it so bluntly, but Richard Hoagland has a marvelous saying that I think is so true. When you think of hyperdimensional physics, there are three rules: rotation, rotation, and rotation. And what is the Large Hadron Collider? Well, it's a huge system of interlocking rotation. That's what it is.
Exactly.
And again, that indicates to me it's a huge torsion machine. It's a huge magnetically rotating machine that's going to cause local planetary effects. So in other words, if you stop and think about it, Daniel, what they're doing is a very, very clever bit of misdirection, because you've got this enormous machine that clearly has hyperdimensional implications. And what are they doing? They're saying, look at how small the particles are that we're spinning up in this thing. In other words, they're directing you to the particle physics, when in fact the machine itself says you should really be looking at planetary effects and possible stellar effects, but they don't want you looking there, because if you start looking there, you're going to be finding interesting correlations like some people are finding and putting up on YouTube. They want you looking at particle physics and the blizzard of equations and be all confused about it, that they're doing all of this arcane stuff.
Yeah.
When in reality, they're doing something else. So in other words, what I'm suggesting to you by that clever use of spin, not to coin a pun, is that they're really talking about public consumption physics, that's the particle physics stuff, and private hidden physics that has nothing to do with particles. It's got everything to do with rotating magnetic fields. It's got everything to do with planetary effects. It's got everything to do with resonance effects, because in a certain way, you could even look at that machine as a huge antenna, you know,
yeah,
a huge broadcasting apparatus. Well, who and what are they broadcasting to? In other words, what's on the load end of the circuit?
Huh.
Think of the collider as the beginning of an electrical circuit that ends up with a load end powering something somewhere else. Well, what is it?
Good question.
And once you start thinking in those terms, you start thinking in terms of resonance effects. So yeah, to me, there has to be. I mean, just by the simple junior high school physics nature of the case, there has to be a hidden program here that they don't want anyone knowing anything about. So keep the stories coming about this breakthrough and that breakthrough and this confirmation and that confirmation of the standard model of physics, which even the physicists themselves tell you they don't really understand. They just have their equations and, you know, this is what it is. No. I'm sorry.
No, there's definitely something else going on there.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's fascinating, too, because when we look at the state of mind of those doing these experiments, and you've shown some interesting evidence here of how they view CERN and the Hadron Collider, and they see it in this almost holy, you know, reverent, ecstatic light. They're almost bowing down before the gods of the Collider. Now, you know, we know they have this Shiva goddess statue in front of CERN. So we're actually seeing a strange blending of imagery and almost religious symbolism.
Yes.
So are they trying to incarnate a new religion, you know, with all this symbolism and this whole approach?
I don't know if they're trying to incarnate a new religion, but let me point out the Shiva statue for a moment. Shiva is the Hindu god of creation and destruction. And if you look at Hindu mythology, Shiva can only create something new by destroying something old, which is a very, very unusual statue to have as your corporate logo or symbol, so to speak, for a collider that's supposed to be doing nothing but particle physics.
Sure.
You know, Shiva is about creating and destroying whole worlds, not just little tiny particles, okay? So in other words, they're telling you in the symbolism again that this is about more than particle physics. Now, it's true that when you look at the language of some of these people describing CERN, I cited one guy in Canada that wrote a book about CERN, and his descriptions, I mean, you'd think that you'd be reading a description of Chartres Cathedral, you know.
Yeah.
Because it is religiously ecstatic, and I would argue even almost idolatrous language they're describing this machine as the answer to all of the cosmological questions that mankind has posed. And again, that is a clue that there's more going on here than just particle physics. Because if, number one, if they're trying to create quark gluon plasmas or strangelets, they are literally trying to recreate the conditions of the universe as their model of physics explains it immediately after the Big Bang. So in other words, that's cosmology right there. They're playing around, in other words, they're telling you right there that they're playing around with the alchemy of the entire universe. They are playing around with a technology that will give them the insight, possibly, in how to manipulate that reality. And that, again, is a godlike power. So their religious language, in a certain sense, is condign to what they're actually up to, even in a particle physics sense. Now, here's the other problem. And I'm going to toss this out for people that have really been reading my books and following very carefully. CERN is embedded underground, as I've said. It's embedded in rock, all right?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Nikola Tesla and his Wardenclyffe Tower and to the statements he made to the New York Circuit Court when a lawsuit was brought against him for non-payment of monies that had been loaned to him for this project. And he was called up to the witness stand and asked to explain what the project was and why it was designed the way it was. And the lawyer asked him a question that these big iron poles were sunk deeply into the ground. Why was that necessary? And you know what Tesla responded? In order for the machine to work, it has to get a grip on the earth.
Huh.
Why? Because when you read what Tesla was really up to, he was inverting the normal electrical circuit of broadcast power.
Okay.
In other words, if you look at a broadcast circuit, the antennas broadcasting out into the air, sending basically electricity out into the air, the circuit is closed through the ground. You know, you've got the ground symbol in an electrical circuit. That's literally the earth. The earth is what closes the circuit for your light bulb, for your computer, and so on and so forth. Tesla simply flipped the whole system upside down and was using the earth as the broadcast antenna.
Wow.
And the return circuit was through the air. Just flipped it upside down. So now let's look at CERN. What do you got? You've got a huge system with magnetic fields far in excess of the local magnetic field of the Earth, embedded in the rock of the Earth, getting a grip on it. So I'm thinking even the possibility that you might be looking at a huge Tesla machine of some sort.
Yeah.
That is literally designed to create effects in the earth. So this, again, tells me that there's a secret project. And Shiva, then, let's remember what else Tesla said. I could crack the planet with enough time and the right resonance. There's your Shiva.
Wow, that is unnerving. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, those two pieces fit together so well.
Uncomfortably well.
Uncomfortably well. And it's interesting you mentioned Tesla there, because that's what comes to mind for me when I look at the CERN experiments. It seems like a bizarre perversion of Tesla's vision.
Bingo.
But this is the fantasy dream of Hans Kammler.
Yeah, it's a really wet dream for the Nazi, you know. Yeah, and gee, lo and behold, who's the biggest country contributing to CERN? It's not Russia. It's not the United States. It's not Italy, France, the United Kingdom, India, or China. It's Germany.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Huh.
There we go.
Yeah. That is really unbelievable.
And it just so happens at the time they turn it on, who's the German chancellor? Well, it's Angela Merkel. What's her PhD in?
Well, she's definitely a scientist.
She's a quantum chemist.
So she's right in line with the project.
Oh, yeah. You betcha.
Right. Yeah. So if we're looking at CERN and the real implications around it, let's turn for a moment to its unintended, potentially undesirable results and the consequences and dangers of that.
Yes.
Let's suppose that they're reckless enough to actually believe they can control it. Is there a possibility it could get out of their control? You know, these scientists who raised the Strangelets issue in the beginning, they were kind of getting at this, and they were suggesting the potential disaster wouldn't be intentional on CERN's part. It would be completely accidental. What kind of controls do they have on it?
There are, boy, that's such a Pandora's box of a question. Publicly, they will tell you that the internal controls go back to these computer algorithm filters that pull out anomalous data or data that it selects as significant and then ships off to all the scientific committees and examining this problem or that problem around the world. And then these scientists look at the data and publish their papers. Okay. So in other words, it's a worldwide project. That's the control that they say is there. In other words, they've built in, so to speak, they've kind of built in peer review into the whole system. All right.
I see.
I don't think that's the case, because I do think you're correct that these people that were pointing out dangers were pointing out dangers of unintended consequences. All right. That's why I do suspect that as part of their, it would absolutely boggle the imagination to assume that having designed a project this carefully and spent so much treasure on it, that they would not have had the foresight to include in the hidden project a control system to look at unintended consequences. This is why I think, this is precisely the reason I think, that there is a hidden data correlation experiment that they have been conducting, not just with CERN, but with other networked computers, that every time this system is turned on, is there an effect? Is there a measurable effect in human behavior, in the stock market, in the commodities market? Is there a hidden behavior or effect noticeable on the planet, in the magnetosphere, in the internal dynamo at the core of the Earth, in the sun? Because when you're manipulating magnetic fields, again, let me emphasize, that are several times stronger than the local magnetic field of the Earth.
Oh, that's amazing.
Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
CERN has magnetic fields that are several times stronger than the magnetic field of the Earth. This is why you see the magnetosphere dipping in the northern hemisphere when that thing is turned on. Would that have an effect on bird migrations? Well, you know, you've got magnetite in the beaks of birds that help them navigate. Okay, so in other words, if you're really being scientific here, you're going to design a hidden control experiment like this to see if there are any other effects that need to be accounted for when this thing is turned on.
Okay.
So, yeah, the data correlation experiments to me are the hidden experiments because, again, let's recall Shiva. Shiva is the god of creation and destruction of whole worlds.
Right.
All right. It's part of that mythology that the gods, meaning the planets, have an effect on human behavior and astrology. All right. So suppose that you have these data correlation experiments. What this gives them access to is not only the alchemy of creation and destruction, it gives them access to technologies that could conceivably, if learned how they affect human behavior or planetary behavior and so on and so forth, would be technologies to manipulate human behavior. So in other words, the implications of CERN, what I'm trying to get through to people, the implications of CERN are enormous any way you slice them. And they're all unpleasant. You know,
right. None of this is looking good.
None of this is looking, yeah, like you said, it's a Nazi's wet dream. It's none of it, because none of it is looking very good. I read one researcher out there that went off into wild, you know, biblical prophecy fulfillment conspiracy theories about CERN.
Oh, boy.
Which I'm definitely not in that camp. But he said something very interesting, that CERN, in a certain sense, is like the sword of Damocles hanging over humanity, because we're literally playing around with, even by the admitted public consumption spin that they put out, we're playing around with things that they think are part of the process of cosmological creation itself. And if you learn those processes, if you have your model confirmed, then it becomes possible to use that knowledge to design technologies to manipulate the very fabric and process of creation itself.
Fascinating. You know, that is so powerful, and we really need to understand and get it out there that we're dealing with something that has implications that are potentially beyond the Manhattan Project, and we really need to see it for what it is. Now, let's talk here about the group that is driving this whole process at CERN. Now, who and what are what you call the cosmology cartel?
That's a phrase I use in the book, The Third Way, to describe CERN's sovereign status. And by cartel, what I'm trying to get at here is that they want to control the information about particle physics and cosmological physics. They've set themselves up, in other words, as kind of the Vatican giving its imprimatur to this theory or that theory. And this is why I think there is a secret aspect of it, because you've got the public orthodoxy that this is all about particle physics, but when you look at the machine itself, it's about something entirely different, and that's for the people in the know. That's the heresies that they don't want you to know about.
Right.
So it's a cartel in that sense. It is absolutely trying to stake out its central role in all particle physics, in all cosmological physics. And that, to me, is a dangerous sign that, number one, the scientific effort itself is being shortchanged by CERN. How do you – let's put it this way, Daniel. Suppose CERN comes along and says, yeah, we found the Higgs boson. Science is all about reduplicating or duplicating results. So how do you, Daniel List, duplicate CERN's conclusion? Well, you'd have to build a big particle accelerator costing billions of dollars and do the same experiment.
Yes.
That's what you'd have to do. Now, notice something. After CERN was built and started making all of these grand announcements, oh, we found this, we found that, what did the Chinese announce? We want to build one too.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to build a bigger one. Now, that tells me something right there. They are suspicious of the results that CERN is putting out, and they want to see for themselves.
They want to verify the whole thing.
They want to verify the whole nine yards. Yeah, you betcha. So in other words, the cartel is under assault, because what do all cartels attempt to do? They attempt to suppress any competing idea or institution.
Yeah, big time. That's going to set up quite the battle royal for supremacy in advanced publicly suppressed weapons.
Yeah. And gee, could the Chinese be setting it up because they realize that there are other implications to what's going on?
I'm sure they are.
Namely, huge, potentially military applicable implications? You betcha.
I see.
Do we want the Germans to have this all by themselves?
Right.
If you're in Beijing, do you want this machine to be under the influence of Germany because they're giving all the money to CERN? Well, no, of course not.
Right.
So you got to build your own. Bingo.
But the idea that the Chinese would be interested in competing with Germans in particle physics is a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because there's Chinese teams involved with CERN. And that tells me those Chinese teams, you know, they're very good mathematicians. They're also very good nonlinear mathematicians and physicists, and that's a whole other ballgame. That tells me right there that they've noticed some things. They're not quite satisfied. We'd better build our own and take a closer look at what's really going on here. We're not being told everything, in other words.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. And then, lo and behold, Russia came along, I think, a couple years ago and said, yeah, we want to build one, too.
Right. Yeah.
So we're, you know, we now have the Collider Wars. the cosmology cartel is breaking down.
Here we go. Well, this is where we are right now. Joseph, amazing stuff. And we'll go ahead and end part two here. We'll do a part three episode that brings together the ancient Death Star information with the future one by forming this completely new picture. And subscribers will get that episode in their inbox next week. So if you're thinking of subscribing, go to darkjournalist.com and do it while that discount is still happening. And of course, that helps the program. If you like it, buy it and make sure it comes your way, or give it as a gift. This is the information that you're really going to need. So it's all at darkjournalist.com. Of course, you can find all of Joseph's books at GizaDeathStar.com.
Right.
And Joseph, it's great to see you. I'm really looking forward to having you on for part three.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with Dr. Joseph Farrell on CERN strangelets and dimensional doorways. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.
Oh, that next one's going to be great. This one's great.